Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Hitler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pedersen scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Eight minutes of hell. How we're labeling it, aren't we?
Hello.
Exactly. We need the reverb in the background. It was bad, man. That was an awful 8 minutes for the Vancouver Canucks, and it cost them dearly. Cost them a couple points in the standing. Cost them a 500 road trip, and obviously the questions all come. And as I pointed out earlier, and you did the post-game show last night.
Oh, boy, did we ever.
Your phone call is welcome, by the way. 280-0650 if you want in on this conversation. Where are you at after this road trip? Where are you at after the weekend? Are you able to take a step back, breathe a little bit, and say, all right, it's a dip, it's a lull, I'm frustrated, but big picture, this will be fine? Or are you saying, nope, I see a trend here, and with no Jacob Markstrom, I don't see an easy way to throw the brakes on this? You guys had to do the post-game show. It was 8 minutes away from being, man, look at Elias Pettersson come back, take control of this game after calling himself out to a certain extent after the Leafs game. Look at JT Miller continuing to lead this team in scoring and the career points pile up. Louis Domingue, hey, this guy might be an option down the stretch a little more than perhaps we suspected. Maybe it's not just pitch and relief every once in a while. The Canucks played a very clean game, man. They didn't even give a reeling team a sniff. 8 minutes away from that. And instead, it gets flipped on its ear. It's about veterans making mistakes. It's about inexcusable plays during an important time of the year, a penalty kill that can't kill anything, a bad goal against Louis Domingue, and it's about a third consecutive loss as this team heads home.
Yeah, and the tone of the text we were getting during the game after those 8 minutes obviously flipped much like the way the game did. And so I get the frustration, of course. There is an element of trying to see the forest for the trees, or yeah, that's the phrase. Because you know you have a night to sleep on it. My frustration last night was it was the veterans doing it. If it's a young team and the young players that are falling behind and not keeping up in a moment like we saw versus Pittsburgh earlier in the season, that's one thing. And it can be forgiven. But for players that are 7, 8, 9 year vets, you're supposed to have gone through the ringer. And in tough moments, you're supposed to know, okay, I know how to process. I know how to stay within myself and not make mistakes.
It invites a different level of criticism.
Yes.
It really does.
And it's fair criticism.
It goes from being one game to, we told you when you signed this contract.
Yes.
Because if those players that we're talking about, and we'll get into each of them individually throughout the course of this hour, but if those players we're talking about, the veterans who did make mistakes and cost this team dearly down the stretch, if they make those plays, that's part of the rationalization. And that has always been part of the rationalization for the way this team was constructed. Yeah, they might be overpriced, but if they close out games in March, if they do the things that these young players have not yet experienced and need to learn about, well, is it worth it? And that's a different conversation. When they make mistakes, it invites a different level of criticism, and that's part of what we're going through here today. Ken in Ladner is the first to call in here on Canucks Central. Ken, go ahead. You are up.
Hey, just a couple of things. I don't know what Antoine Roussel is doing out there at all lately. And the second thing is, this is the year that the Canucks will finally win the draft lottery. Without Markstrom, that's where we're going. Back to the lottery.
You're already playing the simulator. That is Ken in Ladner. Already hitting the simulator right now. No Markstrom, no chance. Do you see it as cut and dried as that?
No. Again, they're still in a power position as far as going to the playoffs, right? Teams still have to overtake them, and they still have games in hand. So as far as it looks uncomfortable because they're no longer in the Pacific 2 or 3, but Winnipeg and Arizona still have to leapfrog them and then hope the Canucks don't win the games that they have in hand. And that's why, you know, Wednesday's game is so huge, obviously, versus Arizona. But you win that game, you really start to distance yourself from Arizona, and then those games in hand become all the more valuable because you can go 6, 7, 8 points up on them.
Arizona's in a four-game stretch beginning Wednesday that could define its season.
Mm-hmm.
Vancouver, Calgary, Winnipeg, then Vancouver again. That second one is down in the desert as opposed to here at Rogers Arena. So this is extremely important for Arizona, which got a much-needed win over Buffalo 5-2 on the weekend. Your point is well made about how quickly things can change. Edmonton's going to play tonight. Everyone else is going to be watching. Edmonton's also going to play tomorrow. Win those two games, Edmonton finds itself right up there with Vegas. Lose both of those games and fail to pick up any points, all of a sudden Vancouver's got two games in hand and just is 2 points back. The context of this situation is so fluid, and we've talked about it week in, week out, and usually we do it on a Monday because one Monday to the next, you can feel entirely different about this operation.
Where were we a week ago, right? We're coming off of the heels of that
9-3,
Boston
yeah.
game, right? And then you have the Montreal game. And we're joking. I think on the Wednesday, we talked about it, and we said, oh, it's suddenly 4 games in 6 that they've won instead of looking at it as, well, they've won 3 games of 9 or whatever it was. It's a totally different conversation week to week. And this is kind of what this team has been. Sat and I were talking about it last night, that they've had streaks, both positively and negatively. They haven't been consistent of 2 wins, 1 loss, 3 wins, 1 loss. It hasn't really been that. It's been that early season run that helped cushion a November fall. And then we get that unreal 14-17 run. And then you're starting to see the inverse now. And the stop and starting points of those runs, you know, hard to define in the moment, but they're in a moment now where it's, okay, 3-game losing streak. You got to flip it around really quick here.
We don't do this every edition of Canucks Central, but it is a little open phone therapy session if you want in. Bill in Vancouver, you are next up. Bill, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So I put this squarely on Benning or Aquilini, I guess you could say. I think if they had stayed the course, I mean, they've drafted very well. If they'd stayed the course and not trade away the draft picks, so next year, I'll name guys that are taking up $23 million of our cap. Beagle, Erickson, Roussel, Sutter, Edler. $23 million on those guys. Do you imagine how good this team would be if we were able to use those draft picks over the last 5 years and build even more? I mean, look at Pocosa. Look at the every draft pick these guys have is going to really help this hockey club. Benning has just killed this team, and next year it'll be exactly the same. They don't have any money.
Thank you very much for the phone call, Bill. So not everything you said there is a fact, but I understand the criticism of a lot of what you just said. Maybe all that money's on the books next year.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a way to part with some of it. There might be a way to part with a bunch of it. Some of it's going to be here for sure. It might not be all $23 million. We don't have to get into all the solutions right now, but we can't factually say those $23 million are going to be on Vancouver's cap hit next year for sure. Also, as much as things look very positive for Pod Coles and very positive for Höglander, for us to say those are going to be impact players in the Canucks lineup, we're a long way from that still. A lot of prospects don't get there. These guys look like they're going to. I don't wish them any ill will, but we've lived through this before with
yeah.
many different draft picks in years past. Is it fair to criticize the construction of this team right now? Is it fair to start looking at next year and saying they're screwed?
Yeah, that's tough because I understand the critiques, but you know, we've talked about this. At some point, you can't be that losing franchise. You can't keep waiting for tomorrow. And if you start developing the habits, and here's the crux of the issue is we're talking about those winning habits, and we just watched a bunch of veterans yesterday not exhibit those habits, right? But this is about the young core players, right? You've got to show them that this is a winning franchise. Absolutely show them that, hey, we prioritize winning because that's what this is all about. And if you can start showing that core of the team, and I'm talking about Pettersson, Hughes, Besser. I guess you can include JT Miller because he's one of the new pieces as well. That core, if they understand, hey, this is about something bigger, and we are the champions of that, that it's being entrusted to us to help build that culture, then that's a good thing. And if it required assets to start building up that winning culture as soon as possible, okay, there's value in doing that. And it's not as if they've gotten poor value in return on those trades. JT Miller has been what you hope a first-round pick becomes to.
Like, he's 68 points.
Yeah, he's been awesome. He's going to be here for 3 more years, and who knows beyond that. So you're getting good value on that trade. Tyler Toffoli has been a good investment that he's providing all these goals. And, you know, I thought yesterday one of his better games, actually, despite, you know, not being on the goal sheet, but he played an overall really strong game. And if there's a re-signing there, that's long-term value as well. This perpetual waiting for tomorrow, I don't understand. You can't keep burning years for Elias Pettersson. And I know it's year one. I was like, oh, we got time. That's the point, though. You've got to go now. And if you give him 11 shots at a Stanley Cup instead of 8, that matters. That's more weird things that can happen in the playoffs.
I get the draft and develop mentality. I get it, because that has to be the foundation for the project in almost every case. But there are a lot of different ways to win, and here's what we can say unequivocally. Teams that win, they employ all of their tools.
Yes.
Draft and develop is part of it. Signing free agents is part of it. Making trades and having to make a significant trade at some point, that is a part of it. Go look at every single team that's been assembled that actually wins, gets to the cup final. They all use all of those tools. Now, you can argue right now whether Jim Benning's used those tools effectively. In some cases, he has. And you can talk about pros versus cons, and are there more things on the negative than the positive? But you have to employ them all. You can't just simply draft young players, hope they all develop together. Nobody wins like that. Nobody. There are certain things you have to do, and yeah, you've got to do it effectively. We talked about this with the Edmonton project. Chiarelli, we all know how poorly it went. The theory wasn't wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The theory of, we're going to have to shake things up, and we're going to have to take some risks here, because we can't just keep drafting first overall. Look where that's gotten us. Now, their evaluation of the players they were getting back or how they were going to employ them, that's what was screwed up.
The execution of the plan,
yes,
is what screwed up. And you can apply some of that to here, right? Again, if you just take away the names, the idea of trading for someone like Eric Goodbranson made sense. Of, we need a top four D-man. They just misevaluate Eric Goodbranson. And obviously that sets you back. The theory of what they were trying to do made sense. They evaluated a problem on the roster and went out to address it. They just hilariously picked a wrong guy. I'm going to make a movie reference for you. Godfather. One of my favorite characters in that, Tom Hagen, who's the family's conciliary, right?
Yep.
Who's very thought-provoking, very always considerate of what's happening for tomorrow, right? And what's one of the complaints you hear a lot in the movie is, oh, you need someone to help win right now. What was the term? The wartime conciliary? It's wartime right now for the Canucks. So you can't keep waiting for eventually we're going to get this right. If you have the means to get it right now, do so. And if you're getting value out of that, then that's mission accomplished. They're getting value out of JT Miller. They're getting value out of Tyler Toffoli. So that's all good. If a player like Josh Leiva was healthy, they would be getting value out of him. Tanner Pearson. All these acquisitions that they've made through other means than just draft and develop, that's all good. The core of this team moving forward has been draft and develop. It is Elias Pettersson. It is Quinn Hughes. It is Brock Besser. It is Bo Horvat. That's all draft and develop.
I agree with that. There are some people on the other side of this. And look, we understand the criticisms. We understand the complaints. You're entitled to them. You're fans. Voice your opinion. You can grab a phone line at 280-0650. You can text us, Subway text line 650-650. This one comes in. I still think that the team will make the playoffs. The only way I don't see it happening is if we just nosedive off a cliff, but I don't think that'll happen. The last 8 minutes had the team in shambles, and you can see that they're embarrassed. I don't think they'll let that happen again. I think this upcoming homestand will help their momentum get going again. There have been 3 occasions where a loss like this materialized this year. I think those are the only 3 that are really in the same conversation. Washington, Pittsburgh, Columbus, where seemingly a game that was wrapped up all of a sudden was gone. It just evaporated before them. Now, the first 2 teams are better, and those 2 losses happen at a point of the season where the points don't feel as critical. The math tells you the 2 points are all the same, but it doesn't feel as critical. Columbus was reeling. Columbus had lost 10 of 11. This, to me, is the worst loss of the season. Now, if you are an optimist, if you believe in reference points, you look back at the Washington loss, you look back at the Pittsburgh loss, and you realize not only did the Canucks win the next game, they won 3 of their next 4 on both occasions. I can't tell you for sure they're going to win three of their next four, but there is evidence to suggest that when they screw up, and they screw up big, because those are the three games that come to mind for worst loss of the season, they are able to get it back in pretty short order. I know the Tampa Bay loss, that was a little bit different because they didn't have a lead in that one. That game got away from them in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Just went sideways at the end of the second period. But that wasn't a game where they had a third period lead, where they'd played so well that the game looked like it was only a matter of time before they finished it off. That loss was a little different to me. I put those other three in the same category. I think last night's the worst loss of the season. You?
Yeah. Because the Pittsburgh one was on so many young players. And the Washington one was kind of, it was just weird. You know, just a couple of weird goals going in on Jacob Markstrom. We sat here the next day and thinking, okay, like, that's tough to do again as far as letting in so many bizarre goals on Jacob Markstrom. And he's been entitled to have a bad one, obviously. But the Columbus, like last night's the worst one because it's from the guys that you expect to have the traits to close games out.
Dexter says, geez, what's wrong with this fan base? A couple losses, fire everyone. Every decision is criticized. Win on Wednesday and back on the bandwagon. Everyone jumps. Have a little faith. Rod in Langley. What do you have to say today, Rod? Oh, he left. Rod went away.
All right, got a text here from Brian in Richmond. Call back Rod. I think you guys are missing the big picture. This is in relation to the fan base. If we want to keep signing top free agents, we need to be a playoff team. Re-signing Toffoli, we need to give him a reason to re-sign. We have players to re-sign. I'd want them to take a discount. We need to be a playoff team. That's from Brian in Richmond. It does set a culture of, hey, this is what we have the caliber of players to get us to the playoffs and that are exciting to play with, like Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, that if you want to become a destination, winning has to become part of that destination.
It's fair. It is absolutely fair. Now, just because you make the playoffs doesn't mean everybody wants to sign with you. We know that.
Yes.
And your real keys to signing these guys are, hey, opportunity to play with Elias Pettersson, opportunity to play with Quinn Hughes, that sort of thing. Some of that is re-sign as well, and the name that wasn't on that list was, forget about re-signing Toffoli. Jacob Markstrom is a name that is on that list that you got to re-sign. You got to convince him he wants to be here, and you can find a way financially to make that happen. Rod in Langley, he is back. Rod, go ahead. You're up.
Hey, guys. How are we doing today? Just a few things there. I think on the road trip in general, like the Ottawa game, I think I would have started Louis Domingue there just to snap the boys out of let's just go in and get our 2 points and get out of Ottawa, you know, because of their situation. And just to kind of refocus them a bit because, you know, they were heading into the big smoke Toronto, and I'm sure there's a lot of family and ticket things going on there for the players as distractions. And then last night's game, you know, I'm sitting on the edge of the couch at 3-1, and my wife's like, what's wrong with you? They seem to have the game in the hand. And I said, well, two things, 3-1, worst lead in hockey.
All right, then we lost Rod again. But get where he's going. It was, the perpetual two-goal lead, somehow the worst lead in hockey. I'd much rather have a two-goal lead than a one-goal lead. But, what's so bizarre, too, is they played very sound for 52 minutes. There was barely any chances from Columbus for a very prolonged stretch from, you know, mid-second to that.
10 minutes into the third, one of the storylines, one of our talking points today was going to be, they played really clean. They played really clean, and they were playing a reeling team, and they just didn't give that team a sniff. That was one of the talking points, which is, if they finish that off, and it's a big if, and we all know how sideways it went, but does that show growth? Does that show growth for this team over the course of the year?
That's, up until that point, like that was one of the periods I wanted to see. To have a close it out, nothing, period, and don't try to force things. That's what's so frustrating with that Brandon Sutter play, the penalty. There was a way to play that and be responsible. He was trying to do too much and then winds up losing the puck and then winds up taking the penalty. There is a safer play to make in context of where you are to help your team to win. He was trying to score a goal, and admirable. However, what's the right play to make there? We can kill more time. We can get zone time. We can keep possession. Trying to go one-on-two is not really a smart play.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I love it when this text rolls in. House radio. Just excuses to keep up the interest. Anyone removed can see this bunch is ready to implode and will. They got more duds than winners, including the coach. Look, unsigned texter. pretty brave. Unsigned texter, you can be of that opinion. That's fine. But to suggest that just because someone's opinion differs from yours, it is house radio, is one of the most clown show comments you can go with. It really is. Lots of people in this fan base, lots of people in this media contingent have varying opinions. Look, there are things to be down on about the Canucks, and there are large questions to be raised as they head into these final 17 games, and they're fair. At the top of the list is goaltending, and it's a very fair question to be asking right now. But to simply label it as a doomsday project at this point.
A diversity of opinions among a fan base, and you know, you mentioned the media as well, is very important because you can explore different conversations, right?
Well, and that's what it should be about, a conversation.
Yeah. A fan base and a media should not be groupthink. It's healthy to have engaging conversations.
Deadhead Canucks fan Mike says, the only critique I'd make of Travis Green last night is that he took the timeout one goal too late. Should have taken it after the 3-3 goal, settled down the troops, and put Demko in the net. I think Travis has done a great job this year, but I would have preferred he pulled Domingue after he was rattled on the 3-3 goal. Seeing Torts jump for joy like that stung for real. I certainly don't agree with the pull Louis Domingue at that point comment and put Demko in net at that point.
That just feels like it's inciting more panic. That, oh boy, we're in this spot, and we just need a couple of good minutes from Thatcher Demko.
And also, big picture, Thatcher Demko needed a night to just sit and chill and get himself ready for Wednesday. That's, because I expect Thatcher Demko's playing Wednesday.
That's you changing the plan, right? You go into that game saying Louis Domingue's getting 60 minutes, or the full game if it goes to OT, and you start changing the plan, you know, it leads to a bigger issue of, well, in a moment of adversity, are you going to follow your plan, or are you going to completely cast it aside and say, I just need this guy right now?
Flip sends in, I still say the Canucks outplayed the Sens, Leafs, and Columbus. All year has been about building the process. Hockey is random. I'm predicting they win 5 of the next 7. Do you agree that they outplayed all 3 of those teams?
The Sens one, you would say it's break even. You'd probably lean towards the Sens. But
yes,
the Leafs and Columbus, I thought they played strong games. The Leafs one comes down to goaltending.
I agree.
And again, for 52 minutes, they were significantly better than Columbus. And Columbus was opportunistic. They got power plays, and they converted. It's if they play like that, they'll be okay.
Doug from Lanceville, I haven't given up on the Canucks at this point. Travis Green's a very good coach. But looking at the other bench, I know Torts would have called out those veterans on the Canucks that made blatant errors. Maybe Green needs to yell and scream like Torts to drive home how bad one mistake on the ice is. I honestly don't think Green can or will do that. It hasn't been in his makeup. And we actually have a clip from Travis Green we're going to play in the second half of Canucks Central with how his relationship with the media has gone and how he's handled this market. Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick taped a podcast with him. It has not been his MO. When he has criticized players publicly, it feels like a last resort type of move.
And it feels as a, there's more growth here. He doesn't use that as a motivating principle for the team or for a player. It's like, I see more in you, and you can do that. But it's not a kick in the pants kind of thing. It's like, I need you to be better for the next game. It's, we're trying to get more out of your own career.
Yeah, that's his philosophy. He just doesn't believe in doing that. Even, I will give you the utmost example of that. Louis Erickson.
Mm-hmm.
How many opportunities have there been since Travis Green's been on the job to bury Louis Erickson publicly? He hasn't done that. And he's had a lot of opportunity. And there's a guy that's in question right now as to whether or not he should be in the lineup. Can you get somebody else in there? He's just a part of that conversation. I think he's the top of the list for most people right now. If there's a change among the forward group, would you agree?
Oh, for sure.
I know people are frustrated with Roussel, but people want 21 on the bench before that.
I think he's just perpetually. I think he's just perpetually leading that list.
We will hear from Travis Green in the second part of the program, and you'll also want to hear from Stephen Valiquette. He was excellent this morning on the morning show. He talked a lot about Jacob Markstrom. He also talked about what he would pre-scout right now in Thatcher Demko. You're going to want to hear that. It's coming up next on Canucks Central, on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Yeah, I'm feeling for our guys in our room right now. It's a pretty good game we played tonight. Good road game. I don't know if they had maybe one or two shots up to the 7 minute mark or 7.5 minute mark there. And it's a tough game.
The old 87%er. Is that what we'll call it? The old 87%er? Last week, Jeff Ward, Flames lose 0.1 seconds on the clock to tie it up in Nashville. Then they lose in overtime. At least they get a point out of that game, but it's a three-point swing. I mean, that was a big game. Nashville gets two. Calgary only gets one. They come closer together in the standings. And Jeff Ward said after that game, I like 98% of our game. 2% cost them. Well, 52 out of 60, that's very close to 87%. If it's 52 and change minutes, Travis Green, I suppose, liked 87% of what the Vancouver Canucks did. It does show you that it does not take long to undo a lot of work.
No, and it's the old phrase of you can't win a game early, but you can lose a game in brief moments. And if you get overwhelmed for 8 minutes in this league, yeah, you can get crushed. And it's a formula that, okay, really elite teams can do that. Hey, we can skate for 25 minutes and we'll get our four goals and we can skate out here. And it's a habit that teams in that middle can't have. Like Columbus, they may not have been executing really well, but they kept coming wave after wave after wave. They may have been parried away for a bunch of minutes, but it's not as if they gave up for a bunch of time and were just coasting. They gave a 60-minute effort. Vancouver gave a 52-minute effort, and it really showed. Is it the legs getting tired off after 4 games in 6 days? Sure, but with 8 minutes to go, you got to empty the tanks there.
This one comes in. Last week on 650, all time slots were chalking up wins in Ottawa and Columbus before the games were played. Media should know better than that. No games are gimmies. You guys are in the driver's seat in regards to the team relations with the fans. Too much time spent speculating and talking about opinions. Bottom line, we spent too much time in our own zone. Now we have to proceed with a backup goalie. We will be hard-pressed to make the playoffs. Why aren't media guys saying this? Last week, you guys were choosing playoff opponents before we make the playoffs. More facts, less opinions, please. I want to clarify something. What I certainly said about Ottawa and Columbus, and I don't want to speak for you, Bick, was you don't have excuses against those teams. And that's different than this is a guaranteed win. No, you lose these games, and you're going to get raked over the coals a little bit, depending on how they go down. And we pointed this out before Ottawa, and we pointed out before Columbus, that every team loses to bad teams at some point. Boston and Detroit was an example we gave time and time again. We didn't say it can't happen. We didn't say the Canucks are a slam dunk. What we said is, you don't have an excuse. There's no built-in, they played a lot of hockey. No, you should, based on talent disparity, and in Columbus's case, the amount of injuries that have decimated that roster, you should find a way to get points at minimum one out of those games, but probably two. And if you don't, you're going to get criticized for it. That's fair.
Especially when the excuses counterbalance, right? It's like, oh, well, the Canucks have a lot of injuries. Well, Ottawa just gutted their team at the trade deadline. Well, Columbus has got a lot of injuries too. So all the injuries counterbalance is how do you persevere among those? And okay, I'm trying to remember if I said it was a guaranteed win. I don't think I did, but it's one that you should win, obviously. Just evaluate the two teams. One team was better on the ice, or was better on paper, and then Ottawa played better, and then they were better than Columbus. Just 8 minutes, torched the game. That's all it was.
It's not that you can't lose. Mm-hmm. It's that in both cases you shouldn't lose. And there are lots of ways, and we saw two different ones in those games. Columbus, for example, you're right. 8 minutes, it all evaporates. Ottawa played better. Like every position, their forwards were better overall. Their defense was better overall. Their goaltender was better overall. They were just better. They just looked like they had one extra step, and the Canucks were not engaged off and up. They were sloppy in that game, and still there they were down 3-2 and looked like they had a pretty decent chance to tie that game, if not win it. Just didn't go their way that night. Lots of opinions continue to call in, or roll in, I should say. Subway text message inbox, 650, 650. This is the latest. All the sky is falling type fans need to chill. I don't understand why when things are going well, you don't hear a peep from these people. As soon as there's some adversity, it's fire the coach, fire the GM nonsense. Fair criticism is cool and it's needed at times, but when it's overreacting, it doesn't help, just makes things worse. Wish these people understood that that's why Vancouver fans have such a bad rep. That's from GB.
I think that's any fan base. I don't know if it's specific to Vancouver that there's a bad rep. It's sports, right? That's fandom. You're going to get volatile opinions, and there's an expectation that no matter what part of a team's timeline they're in, there's always going to be a demand for wins. A lot of fans, I would say more than we probably give credit to, do not recognize when a team is in a rebuild. And you look at a team and it's a game. And so we expect when we pay our money to go to a game that the team is doing their best to get 2 points. Now, the hardcores that are constantly involved and understand where this team is going, or any team for that matter, understands that the probability of when you can win and versus who, it ebbs and flows, and it takes a long timeline to get towards a certain standard. But I think we have to give appreciation to the fact that there is a faction of the fan base that expects 2 points every game.
Oh, yeah. No question about it.
Yeah.
They could play Tampa Bay, and, well, they beat St. Louis, so why not Tampa Bay? But by and large, you play Tampa Bay 10 times, how many are the Lightning going to win?
7. Somewhere on there, yeah.
Likely.
They're a really good team.
Listen, this is us telling you, of course, any team can win on any given night. LA went into Vegas and beat the Golden Knights last night. Vegas comes out of that game having completely outshot and outchanced the Kings, by and large, and lost the game, feeling they should have won that game. And yet, a couple of different things. Marc-Andre Fleury not being sharp on the third goal, power play opportunities, high quality of chances when the Kings actually got them. Hey, they can win. We all know this. That doesn't mean when you need points and you are trying to take a step like the Vancouver Canucks are, that you should say, oh, they shouldn't win that game. It's just a game, two equally talented teams. Nope. Doesn't work like that, man.
That's what makes sports so great. It's as we were talking about earlier, it's like we're going to get diverse opinions. We're going to get diverse investment from people as well.
Sure.
How involved are people day-to-day and where this team is? And now that we're at a point of the season where everyone sees the standings, and it's like, oh, well, they're going to the playoffs. That's what makes a night like last night so frustrating.
I want to get back to Travis Green. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of people bring up his name in the first segment. James is the latest to chime in on Travis Green, who says, Green publicly avoids calling players out because he's a player's coach who commands respect by showing respect. He's more likely to call a player aside and have a discussion about issues than he is to use the media to call them out or air any dirty laundry. He's on the latest edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Jeff Merrick, Elliot Friedman, who makes a weekly appearance every single Tuesday on the program. He'll do so again tomorrow. Here's what Travis Green had to say when they asked him about handling this market and this media contingent.
I definitely think about what I'm going to say. You know, the one thing I when I got into coaching, I kind of promised myself, A, I wouldn't forget what it's like to be the player, and B, trying to keep your, you know, you have to keep your composure as a coach a lot of times too, and not just say things emotionally. You know, I try to be very honest in the media, maybe to a fault, but I don't try to throw players under the bus, especially in Vancouver. I think there's such a passion in the city. The team loves their players. They want the team to win. You have to be very careful because the players also hear, you know, they might hear some of it. They might hear part of it. It could come across in a way that isn't the way you want it to be. And I think I have a good relationship with a lot of our players, and that's not as friends, but as a coach and trying to make them better and having accountability and pushing players to be their best. I just don't know if doing that in the media is necessary. And once in a while that just happens naturally. But, you know, I think for me, trying to be honest about things in the media as much as you can and keeping your emotions in check.
It's a balance he tries to strike between honesty and not burying his players. And at the heart of it is what he said at the outset of that clip, Bick. I promised myself when I got into coaching, I was going to do my best to not forget what it's like to be a player and how you want to be dealt with as a player. And whether each fan agrees with Travis Green or not, here's how he's gone about it. I'm going to tell players honestly to their face what I think about them. And having talked to people around the Canucks organization, that's how he does it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is a guy who, when he got the job, rolled into town, had the Sedins come into his office and said, I need more out of you guys. There's more there. I watched your stuff from last year and you guys can do better. to the two greatest players the franchise has ever had. That's what he said. He didn't say, I'm going to put you in the press box. He said, I need more from you, and I think there's a little more there. He doesn't bury guys because he knows what it's like to be buried in the media. He knows what it's like to be buried publicly. If you certainly haven't heard that first from your head coach.
If you were expecting fire and brimstone from his post-game press conferences directed at the players, I would say to you, you haven't been listening for 2 years. And to me, like, that's not a Travis Green issue. That's a you have not correctly diagnosed the personality of the coach, at least the way he interacts with media. That's not going to be a thing he does. Very rarely has he decided to put a little pressure on a player, but he usually does it more so with actions rather than words, at least publicly. And the actions we can all see, you know, where someone gets slotted on a line, whatever it is, those actions are more obvious than how he is going to articulate with the media.
Now, does he get agitated at times?
Of course.
Yes, he does. Like anybody would, answering questions that often with people that you're seeing every single day and you may not agree with. Of course it's going to happen. And as we said, and we encourage this on Canuck Central, that's why we want you to text. Mm-hmm. You don't have to agree with us. We just want you in on this conversation. That's healthy. There's an accountability for the media and the head coach, and that has to exist and at times be somewhat contentious. It doesn't have to be off the charts. It doesn't have to be Torts going after Brooksy, but there are going to be hard questions at hard times. And sometimes Travis Green has agreed with the criticism or the implied criticism in the form of a question. And other times he is pushed back a little, saying, well, that's what you're telling me, but I don't see it the exact same way. I think that's healthy.
Oh, for sure. Well, it's what we're talking about in the last couple of games. They've lost against Columbus and Toronto, but the guys played fairly well. Like, Toronto came down to one player. Is he going to single him out when he really needs him, by the way? He's really going to need Thatcher Demko. Is he going to single him out before they go on this run, or is he going to try to support him? Because there's a bigger issue at hand, and the 18 skaters in front of them played really well versus Toronto. And then what happens versus Columbus? They play 52 really strong minutes. We're focusing on an 8-minute sample, which is a small in comparison to the rest of the game. And if you're a coach, you're probably going to say, hey, we need to play more like that. Is what happened in those 8 minutes acceptable? No, of course not. But you know who knows that? The players know that. And there's a better way to communicate it from Travis Green's point of view than going public with it. He's going to be honest with those players. That's never in doubt. Any player that we've ever talked to indicates that there's an honesty, and that approach is better received than going through the media to do things.
Maybe at the heart of that entire discussion is Jake Virtanen, isn't he?
Yeah.
How many times has either side been asked about the relationship between the two?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things that people have assumed about the relationship simply because they've looked at deployment or healthy scratch, whatever it happens to be over the course of the years with Green and Jake Virtanen, which obviously dates back to the AHL. But both guys, every time they've been asked about it, have said, I think we have a pretty good relationship. It's a pretty open relationship.
Mm-hmm. It's a mechanism to try to get more out of a player, right? And Travis Green just doesn't use it as much as I think people want. And people want that accountability of, well, if you shout at him in the media, he's probably getting shouted at in the dressing room. I don't know if it's always a shouting match, but there is accountability within the locker room.
I'm just glad you used that vowel sound with those consonants together, because it could have gone
almost screwed it up
an entirely different direction. It's Scott Rintoul, it's Vic Nizar. You've got it on Canuck Central. You mentioned Thatcher Demko, and guys are going to need more from him. Yeah, they're going to need more from Thatcher Demko than they got Saturday night in Toronto. Steven Valiquette, who charts goaltending and has for the last half decade, I thought one of his great points he made, or just little references, was, listen, on every shot that happens in the NHL, we have 34 different points of tracking data. This gives you an idea mm-hmm. of how complex it gets. He was on our morning show today. It was an excellent interview. I'd encourage you to listen to it. Sportsnet.ca/650. He was asked about Markstrom, how good he's been, but he was also asked about Thatcher Demko, and this was his answer to how he, if he were an opposing coach right now, would look at the Vancouver Canucks and their young goaltender.
If I was looking at Demko and I'm playing him tonight, I probably wouldn't think that my bumper guy or my slot one-timer would be something I'd be looking for on the power play or at five-on-five, because he's really good on that shot. He's faced 27 of those this year. He's given up one goal. But on screens, he's a little susceptible on screens. He's had 36 screens this year. He's given up 11 goals. That's four more than league average. So that would bring me to the video. I'd go to my video, and I could tell you, I was looking at this morning. I was looking at the Gauthier goal, the first goal versus Toronto. And you can see that what Demko does is he gets really wide, really low, loses his posture, tries to see it, and gets behind the screen of his own player, Fantenberg, and he can't see it, and he gets beat on it. And he looks like that on all types of screens, layered screens, offensive screens, flash screens. You know, we look at these in different ways and measure them differently. But there's also team concept involved there. So if I was looking at Vancouver and saying, okay, well, the goalie's not great on screens, but that doesn't mean much if Vancouver doesn't give up a lot of screens. Well, they do. And they give up a lot of deflections. They're 30th in the league at giving up deflections. They're 29th in the league at giving up broken plays. We saw that in the third period against Columbus last night.
It was excellent detail that you got from him, and that was just a sampling of what he gave on the morning show today. He broke down that play where Fantenberg goes down even further and said that before Fantenberg goes down, there's a 1.8% chance that that shot turns into a goal. The second that he went down to one knee, turned into an 18% chance.
Yeah, and those are the margins we talk about, and we use them as reference points as far as Stephen's done great work as far as, I think in terms of the Royal Road or cross slot, midline pass, whatever you want to call it, but passes where the goalie's moving east to west. Like, those increase your chances by 30%. Those behind the goal line passes that come in front of the net, those increase your chances, I think, 18, 20%, somewhere around that range. And you look for those indicators more so than just shots on goal. What quality of chances are being created that the goalie has to stop? And, you know, his evaluation of Thatcher Demko, you notice that fairly easy. And we talk about this with Aldi a lot. We'll talk about him later today on the program. And when he joins us on Friday on Canuck Central, he talks so much about tracking and how the feet match the eyes and are you moving as one? And too often, you're seeing Thatcher Demko be very reliant on his limbs. And it just like one thing flails and then he's got to overcorrect and then he flails back the other way. And it's learning to harness his very strong and athletic ability. How do you harness that correctly? And can you move as one? And it's a great point by Steven there that, you know, he gets really wide and he's always trying to look for the puck. And to me, again, the goalie guys can better explain this, but it doesn't feel like his eyes match his feet all the time. And he's constantly overcorrecting that. When a moment comes that he has to make a save, he's not always perfectly set.
It's easy to forget that Jacob Markstrom had to go through all this.
Yes.
It's really easy to forget that because you see Markstrom now, you compare him to Demko now, and you see the difference in levels as far as consistency goes. Jacob Markstrom took a long time to get where he's at, a really long time. And he had to go through different goaltending coaches, and there were various points during his career where he had to unlearn things that had become habits. They are different goaltenders. They have different backgrounds. But here's the similarity. Each guy is going to have to correct things along the way. Ian Clark sees enough in each of them that he believes they can do that. I don't know how long it takes with Demko. I have no idea exactly how the Canucks see their goaltending plan playing out and whether or not they're going to be able to get Markstrom signed. I still think they do. We'll wait and see. But it's easy to forget that he is still developing as a goaltender.
What was that, game 32, 31 on Saturday? So,
and that doesn't mean they can't win with him down the stretch.
It hurts.
They can.
It hurts because there's been such a weight when it comes to Thatcher Demko, right? He's 24 years old. He's been drafted so long ago. And we look at it as far as time from when you were drafted to now, whereas it kind of needs to be looked at to some degree of games played. How much opportunity have you had to see NHL rubber? He hasn't really seen as much as we would like at this stage in his career. And that goes to the other conversation of, well, should he have been up earlier and all those things. This is the development path they've taken. I think it's the right one because it maybe could have sped it up by a year, but they've given him time to marinate. But it also underscores, like, this is his opportunity to simply that. Like, this is his opportunity. This is our first chance to really judge Thatcher Demko correctly. It's been spot starts previously to now.
Now he gets back in there, I assume, Wednesday against Arizona. I can't see it going any other way. Can
I would
you?
Be stunned. I would be stunned. If because this is about not just Wednesday. It's about the next 12 games. And
maybe.
Well.
We'll see.
No, I mean, if you don't bring Demko right back, are you going to hurt his confidence for the next run of games after that? So I would expect that you see Demko on Wednesday.
It's an interesting 2 weeks, and this is something we'll continue to monitor throughout the course of the next 13 days. Edmonton's going to play 8 times. Starting tonight, Edmonton's going to burn a couple of games here, which could be really good for the Oilers, or it could feel pretty decent for the Canucks. Edmonton plays in Nashville tonight, plays in Dallas tomorrow. Not easy places to play. Depending on how that goes, Canucks are going to wake up feeling a little differently about where they sit in the Pacific Division come Wednesday's game against Arizona. So Edmonton has the most game in the next 13 days. Vancouver second. Vancouver plays 7 times between now and March 15th, including March 15th. Then you've got Vegas, 6 games, 5 of them on the road. Golden Knights have not been great away from home, just lost Mark Stone. Let's see how they deal with that. At the bottom of that heap, Calgary and Arizona. Here's the great news. You're going to have plenty of rest if you're Calgary and Arizona. You're only playing 5 times between now and March 15th. The bad news is you got to watch everybody else, which is either going to be really good or really bad. And it's interesting to see just how different the schedules are at the most important time of the year as we head down this stretch.
Well, the Canucks went through a resting period as well through the early parts of February, where they sat idle. And I guess to say the middle part of February, where there was just a Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday stretch there for 2 weeks where a lot of teams started to creep up. And that's why that temperature started to rise here around the market of, oh, the cushion is gone and all that. There's still a cushion if they do their job. And through all of this, what happened over the weekend, the Canucks ultimately still control their destiny. That's the key here, the key thing to focus on. They do their job, they're in. But it's that conversation of, are people losing faith in that they can control their destiny?
You control the destiny of the program every single day.
We do.
Alex Auld is part of that destiny today. Who else?
Irfan Ghaffar. So it's going to be a heavy Canuck show this evening at 4 to 7 with Andrew Walker and Sat Shaw.
Chris Johnson, NHL insider, weighs in as he does every Monday on Reach Deep. Dan Riccio is back from Jamaica. Can only imagine how many tales of that we're going to hear over the next 3 hours. He and Randeep Janda are reunited. Little plug for tomorrow. Commissioner of the CFL, Randy Ambrosi, is going to jump in studio. Be interesting to put a few questions to him here as the CFL offseason continues to churn. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. In my case, Bick will join me, of course, tomorrow at noon. Have yourself a great day. Reach Deep is up next in your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.